Welcome to Flowcast. I'm Sister Beth Murphy. The average worker changes careers 7 to 12 times in a lifetime and actually may change jobs every 12 months. If you sense an imminent career change or a job change, you're going to want to hear this episode of Flowcast. Our guest, Deanna Blackwell, is a training specialist in intercultural engagement and diversity for the Peace Corps. She has some thoughts on how to make that next best move to a new career. She's here with me today to share the insights that she has gleaned from her own experience as a Peace Corps volunteer, educator, and trainer, as both a mentor and a mentee. So welcome, Deanna. It's good to have you with me.
Thanks, Sister Beth. Thanks for inviting me into this conversation. I'm looking forward to it.
Me too. Okay, so any of our listeners who know you would not be surprised about the topic of our conversation today, but I would still like to ask you if you would tell me and tell us the origins of your interest in teaching and mentoring.
I had a desire and urge to teach when I was really young. I suspect that part of it might be nature, and another part of it was nurture. And the nurture part was, I think, two profound experiences. One is my mother is a teacher, was a teacher. And so she just early on imparted to me this deep respect and value for reading, for learning, for expanding the mind, to knowing my history as an African-American woman. So as you know, for my whole life, learning was really a central activity and value within my family. And the second profound experience was in my schooling years. And I remember one particular year I was in high school and I got mistakenly tracked incorrectly. So they put me in lower track classes. I was there for a couple of weeks. And what I noticed when I got there is that who were in those classes were different than the students who were in the college level courses that I had been tracked in and accurately tracked in. So I noticed that there are a lot of kids of color and a lot of kids from working class families, a lot of white kids from lower class families. And just the way the learning experience, the educational experience was approached for them was completely different. In the college level courses, it was a lot of critical thinking. And these classes, it was a lot of multiple choice, true or false. And that was a moment when I told myself, when I understood how people get tracked differently and the role that social identity plays in that. And I wanted to be a disruptor of that. And I vowed to be a teacher. I actually started journaling things like, when I'm a teacher, I will blah, 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 or I will not blah, blah, blah. And that, I would say, is the origins of my desire to be an educator.
It sounds like you had a mission from very early on.
I did. I wanted to improve the educational experience for others and for myself. And that has followed me through now. I suspected it's a lifelong mission.
I know you were a Peace Corps volunteer. Was that right after college or did you have some other experience before that?
I did my Peace Corps experience after my doctoral work.
And so did you have any, forgive me for not being better at looking at your your vitae,
question.
But did you have any teaching experience between your bachelor's degree and your doctoral degree of any kind?
Oh, yes. Yes, I did. So for my bachelor's, I did English literature and composition, and then I minored in world literature. And then in my Master of Arts degree, I did African studies, and that's where I really got connected to international relations. And then I did my PhD in education, culture, and society. Through my master's up into my PhD, I was an instructor at a community college. And then during my PhD, I taught at the university. So, and even before I started college, working in schools was the kind of job that I had when I was younger. My first job was at a daycare center, and I worked every single level. And then I became a Title I teaching assistant. So really all of my work has been as a teacher, instructor, educator. And so when I got the invitation to join Peace Corps, they give you this invitation and they tell you finally where you're going to be placed. And in that placement, they also tell you what job you're going to do. So I eagerly opened up this letter and found out they were going to place me in China and that my job would be to be an instructor for English as a foreign language. So, you know, going overseas, going to China was a great unknown, but the fact that my job would be teaching, I felt confident that that was going to be my my anchor, and it was.
And tell me, what was that like, teaching in a country, in a culture that you had very little experience with until you arrived there? I'd love to hear some stories.
Well, it was, teaching was still my anchor, but it still was nerve-wracking because there is obviously a cultural difference. There's a language difference. So I'm teaching Chinese students who only speak Chinese, and they're beginners in learning English. So we're not going to have really the medium of English to be communicating, asking questions. So everything I did in the classroom really needed to be intentional. It needed to be thoughtful of that language culture divide. And the way I approached it was, at the same time I was teaching English to my Chinese students, I was learning Chinese so that I could function in the community in China in which I was living. So you can imagine all the kerfuffles and oops that I had in trying to use this very complex language. And so I took my language learnings and mistakes and ridiculous moments, and I used them to create lessons for my students. And I did a lot of visuals, a lot of kinesthetic, using my body to tell a story. And the students just cracked up laughing when they heard some of the challenges that I encountered in my day-to-day trying to operate in Chinese. And their laughter, their joy became what connected us to each other. And so they became really open to learning and really eager to learn English to keep closing that divide between us. So I'd say joy and humor and humility were a great bridge as a teacher.
That is such a fantastic lesson. And I'm imagining that that endeared you to your students and them to you, that you showed the humility that you needed while you were learning Chinese to them. I'm sure that made it easier for them to learn English. What a great kind of relationship.
Thanks to
build. That's a beautiful story. So in what other ways over your career have you mentored others? The one thing that I'm familiar with you doing was, I believe, if I have it correct, you were running a program at Lincoln Land Community College before you joined the Peace Corps as a paid staff member. Do I have that right?
Yes.
What were you doing there?
Lincoln Land had just been awarded a federal grant to establish a TRIO Student Support Services program. TRIO is actually a collection of programs starting from middle school going all the way up to graduate level, and it creates an academic pipeline for students who are low income, have a documented disability, or are first in their family to get a college degree. So I was hired to establish that program, and in that role, I and my staff, my team, we reached out to every faculty person, every staff person in that college. We reached for to be a support and a guide for our students to get into college, complete successfully, graduate, and transfer. Those are the four goals of that program.
So another way of being, of having a really impactful relationship with other people within your own hometown.
Yeah. You know, one of my biggest takeaways from that role was it wasn't just Peace Corps that was all about relationships. And in Peace Corps, it was so clear, like having those relationships is what makes that experience successful. And coming back home to lead the TRIO program, I was reminded that relationships are essential for the success of a program. No single person can make it happen for others. You know, it really has to be, what do they say? It takes a village. So one of my first action steps in establishing that program was to build relationships with staff and faculty, because, you know, I knew, my team knew, we needed every office in that college to provide some support for our students. College is a very complicated landscape, you know, financial aid and how do you register and how do you, you know, get academic advising. So building relationships with staff and faculty was key. And then, of course, building relationships with students. And that largely meant being available to them. It meant being non-judgmental. It meant being empathetic and being a very good listener.
Mm. You have mentored others for most of your life, but at some point, most recently, you came to the decision that you needed a mentor for yourself. Could we talk about that a little bit?
Yes. Yes, we can. Should I just dive in?
Yeah. Tell me what you need to say about that.
Where to begin with that? I spent most of my career in higher education, working at a college, and now work for the Peace Corps. And that is considered a profession in international relations. I really love this work, and I want to continue. And Peace Corps has this interesting rule where after 5 years, you've got to get out of the agency, and you have to be out 5 years, but then you can come back in 5 years. So my clock was ticking, and I started my job search. And I started to realize the field of international relations is completely new to me. I don't know where this landscape begins and ends. I don't know the roads or the street signs or the highways or the rest stops. And I really am committed to this work. So I had to realize I needed help. And very often for me, I kind of get into this self-sufficiency mode where help for me is I read a book or I figure it out myself. And I didn't have the knowledge. So I just got to a point of deep humility and urgency. And so I started opening up my feelers to find a mentor. I started actively seeking for a mentor, in fact.
What did that look like? looking for a mentor. How do you begin to look for a mentor?
I looked around where I was. I started where I was, which was, thankfully I was in Peace Corps, and I looked around for other people who were in positions, people that I respected, people who seemed to have made some really wise career choices, people who were in positions that I thought I might like to be in one day. And I started writing down their names and thinking about how might I approach having a conversation with them or inviting them to have a conversation with me. I will say that I have found in most of my life that I look for women and women of color in particular as potential mentors. I mean, you know, hypothetically, I'm open to anyone. And I have had, you know, a white male mentor. I've had mentors who are men and people who are white identified. But there is something important for me about speaking with someone who shares a similar identity and understanding from their perspective how they've navigated some of those challenges that are really specific to race, gender, sometimes color, for example. Being a light-skinned African-American woman, that has its own unique experience.
What does that relationship look like? When the two of you sit down to talk, I'm presuming that you're doing that in person, or maybe not, I don't know. But what happens there?
I love what happens there. I, to be honest, when I had a mentor, I really am a very particular person, and I have been skeptical about having a mentor. I'm the kind of person who I don't like people telling me what to do, and I'm inclined to go the opposite direction. And so for a long time, having a mentor was just, it just felt like something I just did not want to have anything to do with. But again, like I was sharing with you, I just got to a point of deep humility where I need help. So when I started with my mentor, I was like, how is this going to be? You know, am I going to enjoy this? Is this going to be terrible? Am I going to have to bounce myself out of this and as quick as I came into it? But what I've found is she is also very, she's very non-judgmental. It never feels like she's weighing my experience against hers. She always is curious and interested in what I'm doing and what I'm thinking about and how I'm thinking about it. And like I was saying earlier, when I talk about things, she'll name it like, oh, that's a really important training skill. She also shares some of her experiences, which makes me feel like, oh gosh, this doesn't have to be a straight and narrow road to get to where I want to be. And there's a lot of humor. We're always laughing, which is, again, that element of joy, which I've heard before someone say laughter is the shortest distance between two people. And when we laugh, it really feels that way. So, yeah, it's just a very joyous thing. One thing I would like to add is, to my surprise, as if the conversation wasn't enough with my mentor, each time I got off the phone with her, or we would actually Zoom, have our meetings by Zoom, I felt this burst of energy, of positivity, and of confidence. And I kept having that experience after every conversation. And it occurred to me that her naming things that I do or the way I think is having value was helping me value my own strengths in a way that I hadn't before. It just was like, oh, it's what I do. Oh, it's just who I am. I was taking for granted my own qualities, and she was encouraging me not to, showing me how not to do that.
That is really powerful. And I think for our listeners, I need to say, you know, I don't know how old people think that you are, but you're not exactly, you know, a young woman anymore. And nor am I. So we have to own that. And the reason I bring that up is I don't want our listeners to think that this is something that you do when you're 20 and then you don't do it anymore.
I love that.
Because I think that all of us, you know, like, you don't strike me as the kind of person whose goal is the gold watch at the end of a 30-year career. Like, I think that you're going to be doing meaningful, purposeful work until the day you die, and that's what you would like. Am I wrong about that, or am I...
You're right about that.
Okay, so you're not seeking the gold watch or a 30-year career and then a blissful retirement. You are seeking a purposeful life that can make real change in the world.
I am 50 years old. And that was part of my reluctance in seeking a mentor. I was thinking, oh my gosh, am I too old for this? Are they going to say, you should know this already? Shouldn't I have it all figured out? And the fact of the matter was, is I did not have it all figured out. And will I ever? I don't know. I'm sure there's going to be many more points that I don't have figured out. But what was important for me to figure out in this particular moment was I have an idea of the kind of work I want to do. And I know enough about myself to know I want to contribute to people understanding, communicating, building relationships with each other across their differences of culture and differences around their social identities. And I want to be a part of their learning and development. I knew that much. I also knew I want to be in a healthy workplace. I want to be in a workplace culture where I feel like I belong, where I feel included and valued. And so it was that question that I brought to my mentor in our first encounter was, can you help me find this? So I was paired with her because in my job, they have a program for women and they get together every month and they just talk about different topics, often related to career. And I noticed that they had a mentorship program they were promoting. And so I looked at the application and I emailed the coordinator and I said, is there an age limit on this? Because I'm 50 years old. Is this for the 20 somethings or the 30 somethings? Can a 50 year old participate in this? And thank goodness there is no age limit. And then I got a list of people who wanted to be mentors, and they asked us to pick our top three people, which I did. I got someone who wasn't even on that list. And as she tells the story, what happened was, is she wasn't going to be a mentor, but she saw my resume materials, and we have an affinity because we both attended University of Utah and we have a Peace Corps connection. And she said, I want to mentor her. So I do think that is an important ingredient in the mentorship experience is, as a mentee, being with someone who wants to be a mentor, with someone who does want to work with you and help guide you and support you, someone who has time for that and energy for that and capacity for that. And I'm grateful that my mentor does have all those things and can be present as a really good mentor.
What advice would you give to the 20-somethings about their own journey? Would you recommend that they just go ahead and find a life coach or a mentor, or are there some other ways that they could get that same kind of support?
That's a very important question, Sister Beth. I would say that I think it's important for 20-somethings to find at least one person who's in a different generation than they are, who's willing and able to spend some regular time with them, maybe once a month, once a week, once every 2 weeks, for at least an hour, to just have an open, non-judgmental conversation where the young person can just show up as they are, with all that they are, and bring any questions, concerns to the table, and be assured that the person on the other side is not going to scold them, is not going to try to teach them a lesson per se, but to be more affirming, more empathetic, and be a good listener, and believe that that young person has full potential, even if they also may need some guidance.
Because who doesn't?
Who doesn't?
Would you say something about the role that your own faith is playing in this journey?
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up. It's actually a new topic for me to be thinking about lately. I'd say it's really been activated over the past 6 months. Or I'll say I've always been a faithful and spiritual person. But over these past 6 months, my faith has it's changed form in some way. And I think in a way it mirrors the moment of humility I described I had when I reached for a mentor, which is I'm just at this point and I have to say I need some help. or I think in my case it was realizing how much help I had received without even asking. As you know, my work has, especially for the past year, involved a lot of international travel. And when I came back from my last trip, I had this sense of, oh my gosh, I made it safely through all those trips, all those airports, all those countries in conflict, airport strikes, delays where I got bumped off a plane but had to wait overnight to get something out. I mean, and then moving and maneuvering in countries that are not my own, with various levels of safety and security issues. I had a deep, deep gratitude for God carrying me through these known challenges and what I can only assume are a lot of unknown ones that I never had to encounter because God was watching over me every moment. And that propelled me to start going to church, Sister Beth. I went to go to our local church, and the aspect of service that I am most drawn to that really speaks to me right now is the praise and worship, the singing, the music, and that those first moments when we're all allowed to just express our gratitude for God. And I often find myself in tears, just ever so thankful. And how that relates to this is part of it is humility, you know, realizing that I do need help. I do need some guidance. The other part is gratitude, being thankful for what I do have, and where I am headed. And there's another part that it's a little hard for me to name, but best I can say is this belief that God has really put me here for a purpose and a service to others that I'm still discovering. And that faith in God's purpose for me also fuels my career seeking.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Well, that's powerful. And I think the power of what you just said, you've used that word humility so many times. That is something I think we all learn at different times in our lives, but certainly as we grow in age, humility becomes a quality that we recognize a need for. And out of that humility, that's where the praise comes from that you express, you experience when you go to church, right? And that need to do that, not just by yourself in your bedroom or on a lovely landscape somewhere, but in the company of other people who, whether they tell you their stories or not, are there for the same reason. It's the unspoken communal sense that God cares and loves and has a purpose for each one of us. That is just, I think, so powerful for the people who are going to hear you and to hear the story of your journey. So I can't thank you enough for what you've shared with me what you share with our listeners. You know, we are living in wild times. And I think we're lying if we pretend that we have it all together and we know exactly what we should be doing. So to seek out others, whether it's a life coach or a mentor or a spiritual director or a friend who, as you say, is maybe a generation ahead of you or who has deeper life experiences, someone with whom we can unpack. At least that's what I'm taking from our conversation today, that we want to unpack with someone else the experience of our lives in order to be the best person that we can. And to be an agent for change, even if it's just in the smallest way, in the universal scheme of things, no single one of us can change the trajectory of the world. But our single acts of kindness can move us along. And so I could keep going, but I think I need to just say thank you for this lovely conversation.
I want to add one thing is what's even motivating me here tonight is that people, you know, you have listeners and I'm hoping that there's something that resonates with them and can be of service to them in their journey. And I would offer a challenge to anyone listening And anyone in that point of that place of feeling like I need some help here. I need a little support. I need a little nudge. I would challenge you to be brave enough to believe that you are worth someone spending time, taking time to hold space for you, for your growth, for your thinking, for your hopes, for your fears. And that there's someone out there who you can trust with that, who's going to be your champion. And that would be my challenge and my hope for any listener of any age, of any identity, any background. There's a person out there for you. Find your person. Find your person, find yourself.
That's beautiful. Find your person and find yourself. So that's the challenge for our Flowcast listeners. This is just a quick reminder that the Flow in Flowcast is an acronym for the life of the world. So just as Jesus gave himself for the life of the world, each of us is called to do the same, which is what I think Deanna is doing. So if you'd like to give Flowcast some love, please share this episode with your family and friends and encourage them to listen too. On behalf of the Flowcast team, which is Jean Ann Miller, Brandon Durham, and myself, thank you for listening.